always important to you, it's always important to us. Calgary's only all sports radio, Sportsnet 960. Steinberg, Kerr, the big show on Sportsnet 960. Brought to you by the Comedy Cave. Tickets always $10. If it's comedy you crave, come to the cave.
The countdown continues for the 2016 World Cup of Hockey. And I've got to say, for someone who looks at the upcoming month-long tournament as a blatant cash grab for the NHL and the NHLPA, like, plain and simple, they've made up this tournament and fabricated as international pride and who owns this game and all that, but in reality, it's like, how can we line our pockets more? Knowing all that, I'm actually pretty excited for it. Like, yeah, it is a blatant cash grab, and it is all about making money, and it is all about making that pie bigger. But doesn't mean that I'm not excited for it, because it's something new. We haven't seen this for 12 years. We haven't seen a preseason international tournament since 2004. It's still high-level best-on-best competition. And with the advent of Team North America and the advent of the European All-Stars team, as much as some people don't like that, you know, Peter Lombardi is not the biggest fan, I think it adds a little bit of spice to it. So I'm actually really interested to see how it plays out. But at this point, I'm not sure, I'm curious. I'll ask you in a second. I'll ask you on the text line. I'm curious, like, is there a big buzz for it? Are people counting down the days and crossing off the calendars? How much of a buzz is there right now for the World Cup? Because personally, I can't sit here and say that I've been at bars or walking around and heard a lot of people talking about the World Cup and how excited they are and that type of stuff. It's been more about Johnny Gaudreau and the fact that he hasn't signed and Sean Monahan's contract and, you know, how much better are the Flames going to be because of their goaltenders. But here's Chris Johnston from Sportsnet, who gives his thoughts on how the buzz might pick up here in the next little while.
I think it's going to be better than most people are anticipating. I mean, certainly right now, you know, when I'm out with my friends or, you know, around town, I'm not hearing a ton about it, but, you know, it's still almost a little less than a month away before the real games start here in Toronto. And before that time, there'll be training camps and exhibition games and other things, I think, to put it more on the radar. And I just can't envision a scenario where you have a Canada-Russia game, say, at the Air Canada Center, and you got Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin and Alex Ovechkin and all these players playing in it, and there isn't some excitement and you know, lots of people in the stands.
So I'm not sure how much buzz there is right now, and you're the program director of the station, so you'd know a little bit more in terms of advertising buzz and that type of stuff, but I can't say I've really picked up a huge buzz, but I know that I'm looking forward to it. I know that I'm like, geez, I'm actually pretty excited for September 4th when training camps start and the pre-tournament games and then the games for real. Maybe it's because it'll give us more to talk about in September, yeah. But I'm looking forward to it.
I think there is not a huge buzz on for it, but I think there will be. I think the Olympics take away from that. I think the summertime takes away from that. But this is a hockey city. This is a hockey radio station. Every time we do something that's related to hockey, the NHL, it's always very popular with the audience and very, you know, to be frank, very popular with the advertisers. And that's always been that way. I think for people that are maybe a little younger, like I don't remember 1972. Sorry, I don't remember it. I was too young. But I remember those ones, you know, Mary Lemieux in the
87.
87 was unbelievable. Even 91 was pretty cool, too.
What about 96 in the year that the U.S. beat Canada?
I remember watching a pre-tournament game at the Saddle Dome against the Russians, Canada versus Russia, and I had horrible seats. They were in the upper loge, but I loved it. It was the best game I'd seen up until maybe, you know, the 04 playoff run, like live in person at the Dome. It was a pre-tournament game, but they were giving it. So I think, give it some time, the buzz will be there. And I think probably that older demographic that remembers, now, they've kind of twisted things a little bit in the Team North America, which is, okay, we'll see how that goes.
So are you like, okay, so there's Peter Labardius, who is so anti-Team Europe and Team North America. Like, he abhors the potential of Connor McDavid playing against Team Canada or Sean Monahan playing against Team Canada. He hates the thought of that.
I hated the idea, when thinking back to, remember the All-Star game when they have, like, the North American guys versus the... I always thought that was just kind of, like, inappropriate. It's not racist or anything, but it's kind of just segregating people for no reason. I go, what does that matter where your passport's from? But when it's a country, But I guess I'm willing to give it a chance, right? If it doesn't work, then you know what? We can bring Latvia back or whatever, right?
Switzerland or Slovakia,
you know, whoever. Yeah, you can do that. But I'm willing to give it a chance, but I can understand why the hardcore people aren't totally into it.
None of me is going into this from a patriotic or you know.
No,
there's no rooting
let's
interest.
Let's just see some really
me.
Good high tempo hockey in September. That's what I want to see.
That's the only reason I'm excited. Cause it's like I have zero rooting interest. It kind of is like once you get to the postseason and the Flames are out and we're like, okay, well, we have no more vested interest in what happens here. I just kind of get to the point where I'm not like, I just want to watch good hockey.
We're not going to have that emotional call-in show that you had after the 2010 Winter Olympics and guys...
Or even 2014.
Guys practically crying when they... You know, that kind of stuff happened.
Bill Rashad named his kid Sydney because of what he was born on the same day. Named his kid Sydney.
You're not going to see that. I don't think with
17th
that.
17th like, Avenue isn't going to explode.
Well, it might not explode, but it might be into it, you know. I think it's going to be kind of neat. We start at the Czech versus Canada, and then NA versus Finn. I suppose that's North America versus Finland, and then Russia versus North America. These are just the games we've got. USA, Canada, always cool. Europe versus Canada, Czech versus the United States, and then a semifinal on the 23rd and 24th, and then...
These are the games that we're carrying.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it going, well, okay. North America, Finland. Yeah. Okay. Well, that'll be cool, I guess.
So we're and just for sake of interest, we're carrying all of Team Canada's and all of Team North America's games.
Basically,
correct?
Yeah.
When we can.
Yeah. So it basically, I think we've got 2, 4, 6 games, and then the playoffs, regardless of who's in it.
Right. So we're doing semifinals and all that finals. Type of stuff in finals, and then for the round robin, we're gonna try and because. The Flames have got their two players on Team North America.
Yeah, and then I think there's one game we have to move to 660. And so we're kind of, as much as we're in summer mode now, we won't be in September. And it's going to be tough to kind of get, and then the Flames have their training camp. They got Penticton, the Blue Jays doing their thing. We got the NFL starting. It goes from 0 to 100 here pretty quick on this station, which is cool. I mean, it's been a pretty busy summer anyway, but. Yeah. But, so this is just an added wrinkle to everything. So, very cool.
He's Kelly Kershaw, Pat Steinberg. Big Show continues on this Tuesday afternoon. I'm really interested on so many fronts. Okay, so what are the crowds going to be like?
Well, what kind of crowds are they going to be? Are they going to be the, we're too cool to cheer and we'll be in the bar for most of the first and second periods because...
Like Maple Leaf crowds?
Maple Leaf crowds. That kind of stuff? Because I hope not. I hope fans can actually go. Like, I want it to be like a World Junior crowd because the Toronto crowds are like, and honestly, and Calgary crowds used to get kind of painted with that too corporate, too cool to cheer kind of thing. But I think that's changed in the last, 10 years or so. But I hope people get into it. And I hope we get some people that come over and cheer on the Americans, come over across the border. I hope we have a little bit of fun that way.
Well, are they going to sell out the other games? Like, is Team North America versus Team Finland? Is that going to jam the ACC? Like, I don't know. I would hope so.
Like
but
does Finland play the Europeans or something? Is that going to sell out?
Yeah. Like, I don't. And that's what I think Canada will be fine, and I think some of the other marquee matchups will be fine, but I don't know. Like, some of these other games that maybe don't have the same type of allure, is there going to be packed houses for that? The NHL and the NHLPA, I would imagine, are anticipating that, but I don't know. Until we actually see it, I don't think we know.
You better figure out a way to get those seats to people. Because that, like, I mean, they did a great job. Remember when the World Juniors were here? We made sure that the Latvia, Finland, or whatever games that were here that weren't, like, at 4 p.m. on a Tuesday. Well, people were there and they were cheering, and it's important to do that. So I hope we see that.
And I don't know if it's going to be like, are we going to see sold out buildings and are we going to see
people? Are the Blue Jays going to steal their thunder?
Well, and that's the other thing, because we'll be talking about pushing for the postseason and the postseason kind of starting right when it all is getting going. So, or kind of concluding. But I mean, if the Blue Jays are in a pennant race for the American League East, and they've got a huge series against Boston near the end of the year, for instance, which I believe my dates are correct, will be going kind of head to head with the World Cup.
So. Yeah. And the Jays also have, I can't see it from here because it's over your shoulder, but the Jays have that Western trip too, right? So that will be interesting because they'll be out on the West Coast for some of that too.
Right.
So I'm curious. I mean,
it's a big city, right?
It's a big city.
And maybe that helps.
And they love hockey there. They love Leafs hockey there, especially. But I think when push comes to shove, people will get the hype machine will rev up and away we go.
How much interest will there be in this city about the Flames preseason? Because remember, it goes on simultaneously. Like, are we obviously on this station? We'll be splitting. We'll be talking lots about the World Cup. We'll be talking lots about the Flames. And but I'm wondering from an interest standpoint, how people will be splitting.
I don't think there'll be that sexy story for the preseason this year. I think, you know, number one draft picks and stuff. That's always interesting to see how they do in big time competition. But I think you see as I see kind of just how our web hits go and just how things go as that first week of preseason gets into the second week and some questions start to get answered.
Mm-hmm.
You see a little bit more of okay. You know, whether it's a storyline like TJ Brody was a few years ago, like, oh, we can't send him back just yet because he's too good. Or whoever that storyline is this year.
You know, 2 years ago was whether or not Gaudreau was going to be able to make the team.
Yeah, exactly. So I think there will always be that buzz, but I think people are just starving for hockey too. And I think they're just absolutely just chomping. It's been a long time since we wrapped things up. That was a while ago, right?
It feels like it was funny because last year they go and they play into mid-May they played into because they were in round two. And I remember, you know, talking to Rob and we're like, holy cow, it's like July. When did July creep up? And Rob's like, you know, but think about it. Like, we're so used to be done our cycle in mid-April. So we're like, we're in June mode right now, but actually it's July. Whereas this year they ended in mid-April and it feels a whole lot longer this year. Final question. And I ask you because, you know, you do the Sportsnet conference calls and, you know, you're a little more corporate than I am.
Yeah.
Are the TV ratings going to be, like, are we talking about strong TV ratings? Are we talking about Stanley Cup finals? Are we talking about Tragically Hip's final concert? Are we talking about the Olympic gold medal game? Like, what are we talking about for TV ratings?
Somewhere in between all that, I think the games, like, if you say, okay, on Tuesday, September 20th, United States versus Canada at 6 o'clock our time, that's going to do well.
8 o'clock out east.
Out east. That'll be strong. That'll be like a really strong Montreal, Toronto, you know, will it be fourth round of the Stanley Cup playoffs strong? Probably not. If there's a buzz and a story on the playoffs and if Canada gets in there, well, then you're going to see some big numbers come last of September, beginning of October. But I think it's you know, selfishly, it's just gravy for us because we don't normally have this.
I love it. Like, right? I'm like, I quite honestly, so we're going to have all in about you were telling me about the Saturday the 17th of September and just how busy we are. We got like 11 shows going on all
this
station.
All kinds of stuff going on.
But I mean, just think about it because you broke it down. We've got training camp. We've got the Penticton Young Stars Classic. We've got the World Cup. We've got the NFL starting and the NHL preseason. And the Jays. And I totally forgot about the Jays in the postseason. Like, you know, we're going to start to need Jack FM to start playing some.
Well, yeah,
stuff.
And then and also the Stampeders. Don't forget about them because they've got some storylines themselves. Yeah. This team is still with one loss, you know, after Labor Day and after, like, you start thinking they're one of the best teams around. Are they like Doug Flutie like type numbers?
Because
I don't see them slowing down anytime soon.
Yeah.
So if you're looking at a team that's flirting with like 16-1-1 or some combination thereof. Who's going to beat them? I know I'm switching subjects a little bit, but I don't see anybody that's
this point.
Like
no.
Who?
I mean,
well, we'll see on Sunday if the Ticats can come in here and play a decent game, which
the Eskimos can figure out what they're doing defensively. Maybe they can give them a run for their money in the postseason if they meet there.
It's going to be busy. Going to be busy.
There is a slight bit of bad news on the World Cup front. Jamie Benn will not play for Team Canada. And I'm no knock on Logan Couture is going to replace him. I'm kind of disappointed because I was looking forward to seeing Benn and Seguin as a duo. Wearing Canadian jerseys.
I just didn't think that's much of a surprise. They said that, oh, no, he's going to try. I go, that was pretty, pretty serious surgery that he went under. Like, that's his first priority is to get healed up and get ready for the Dallas Stars. They're paying him a ton of money.
Yep. So, especially now they are.
Yeah. But too bad, too, because I think he's...
He's one of the top, four or five forwards in the National Hockey League mm-hmm. right now in terms of how he can impact a game. And like he's
too bad he never plays very well against the Flames.
No, he's never had good games.
Yeah,
he
should really concentrate on that.
That was that 3 years ago? Oh, never forget that night. I was like, holy cow, will somebody do something about those two?
Yeah, are they're on the ice again.
A 9-goal night for Jamie Benn. The only question I have about the replacement, no knock on Couture, because I think he's a good replacement, a heck of a hockey player, really big fan of his, but like, what has Corey Perry done to piss off Hockey Canada? I don't get where Corey Perry has gone wrong. And I say that somewhat tongue-in-cheek, because I don't think he has done anything, but... I mean, Corey Perry has done nothing but perform when wearing Team Canada's jersey internationally. And
he goes no matter what.
Well, and that's the other thing. So they get eliminated in Game 7 of Round 1 against Nashville, and he's on a plane the next day to go wear Team Canada's jersey at the World Championship.
He was almost there as quick as Ovechkin was.
Yeah, he might have been even quicker, right? So Perry goes right away. He's always represented Canada well. He's still one of the best natural wingers in the league. I thought it was almost a slam dunk when I saw Ben. The first thing I saw in my email this morning was Ben can't go. I'm like, well, they must be naming Perry. Then you open the email, you see the full subject line. Oh, Logan Couture instead of Corey Perry. I wonder why they haven't gone down the Corey Perry road, because he's the guy I would go with.
Is there maybe another injury that they think might be happening and they're not saying?
Could be.
Maybe they've got kind of leaving that ace up their sleeve, as it were. Or maybe they owed one to Couture, maybe, right?
He was supposed to be one of the finalists, the final cuts before the Olympic team in 2014, but I would have gone with Perry, I think.
Yeah, that's what we talked about earlier. I think they have their reasons, and I don't know, and they won't ever tell you the straight goods. We'll have to kind of find out surreptitiously, but...
The other guy that would have been in the mix, Taylor Hall, you think? He would have been potentially in the mix?
Yeah, same kind of player, right?
Yeah.
All right, so...
Ryan O'Reilly?
Maybe O'Reilly, although I think I'd put Perry and Hall ahead of O'Reilly on that.
Unless they're expecting like super, a different style of game, like a little more European, as it were.
But it's being played on NHL-sized ice. Again, that's another reason why I was like, Perry seems like he's a pretty good fit. Again, not knocking Couture, good hockey player and absolutely deserving to be on the team. It just... That remains a bit of a head-scratcher. Hmm. Perry didn't make the first team, didn't make the second cut, and now with an injury, didn't make the third cut. Just a couple of texts at 960-960. Is the World Cup and the NHL preseason going to happen simultaneously?
Yeah.
Yes, and that'll be very interesting because there will be games being played. There'll be 8 preseason games in a night, and there'll be a World Cup of Hockey game or two in the same night. So they will be going on simultaneously. No interest in World Cup of Hockey. Not watching hockey in September when the days are still nice out. Would much rather the Olympics every 4 years.
What are you talking about?
Well, if this is going to be the weather for the rest of the summer, maybe not. Holy, that was a... Living on the old 20th floor. Goodness gracious.
A little windy?
It gets windy up there. It feels like the condo's going to blow over. You're like, what is going on? Pat, don't forget that this is posturing by the NHL to skip the next Olympics. I hear a big buzz about the World Cup, and specifically a lot of people excited about the young stars potentially giving Team Canada a run for their money.
Do you think that they're not going to go to South Korea? There's no chance.
I think they're going to go.
You think they're going to go?
No. I think it's too important for the players.
Even with all the money and stuff that they have to, that the IOC doesn't want to pay for anymore?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's going to have to be some negotiation. I think I don't think the IOC and the IIHF are going to concede all the way to what the NHL is asking for. I think that the players want to go so bad. The players really do have a desire to represent their country in the Olympics. And look, I mean, if you're Anze Kopitar or Zdeno Chara or, you know, guys who are, as much as playing on Team Europe's cool, it's still not playing for your country, right? And at the Olympics, you know, Anze Kopitar had a really good run with Slovenia in 2014. And, you know, Connor McDavid would probably rather represent Team Canada than represent Team North America, right? So I still think there's a large desire for the players to go. And because
of that. Cool. The Olympics are cool, right? If, you know, getting a gold medal or...
It's better hockey I'm not anticipating the World Cup to be anywhere near what the Olympics are. Like, you're talking about mid-season hockey where everybody is at the height of and kind of at the peak of their season, as opposed to just kind of getting into it. And I'm not saying it's going to be preseason hockey, but I don't think it's going to be at the same level
won't
as the
any,
Olympics.
There won't be any cruddy teams. You won't have Team Norway or any of that kind of stuff.
That's true. There's not going to be a lot of 10-2 games, I don't think. But I don't know. I still think they're going to go. I think that, and I'll be disappointed, like very disappointed, and think the NHL is making a huge mistake if they don't go to South Korea. Because then you can't pick and choose. You can't go South Korea, no. China, though, yes. Definitely Calgary if they get it, yes. I just, you can't really pick and choose. So, I don't know.
Or can you?
Yeah, you might be able to. I mean, they'll probably take you if you want to play. But just kind of devalues. If they don't go in 2018 but go in 2022 and 2026, then doesn't it totally devalue the 2018 games?
Well, and I was just thinking, like, let's say they don't go, and we kind of rev up our Hockey Canada national team that toured around and did all the cool things they did, and then and say, yeah, this is only a 4-year sort of deal, and say, yeah, sorry guys, we're getting rid of this program now. We're not going to have a team that does that. Like, that's kind of dumb too.
I don't know what they're going to do. I that's why, and because of all those, I think they're going to go. I think they'll go. And I think the IOC and the IIHF will make a few concessions to make it happen. Big Show brought to you by the Comedy Cave, where today is BOGO Day. Buy one, get one. So I say, well, you hear Rob and I talk about it all the time. You're never going to pay more than $10 to get in at the Comedy Cave. It's the best value in the city. However, sometimes you'll pay less than $10, like today. So you want to take the lady out. She's always on you for, okay, enough.
You never take me anywhere. Well, Why don't we go somewhere fun?
Let's go to the Comedy Cave. And she doesn't have to know it's buy one, get one. She doesn't have to know that you're really, really making the least effort possible to get off your wallet. But still, you're talking about $10 for two entries into the Comedy Cave tonight. Buy one, get one night. It's BOGO night. Chris Gordon is your featured performer. ComedyCave.com to make your reservation and buy tickets, or call 403-287-1120. Why was it only natural to see Sean Monahan sign before Johnny Gaudreau? One of our NHL insiders has a pretty good theory on that when we come back. Big Show continues here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Some guests on Sportsnet 960 appear on the South Street Burger guest hotline. Delight in a flame grill burger, over 30 toppings to choose from, local craft beers on tap, and a new patio at the East Hills location. More at southstreetburger.com.
Text 960-960 anytime to contact, chirp, applaud, agree, or disagree with Sportsnet 960. And by the way, keep it clean or clean enough. The Big Show continues on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Brought to you by The Comedy Cave. Tickets always $10. If it's comedy you crave, come to The Cave.
Johnny's an important guy, and as all our players are. And he's a terrific young player. He wants to be here. We want him here. And you keep working away at it, and we're have every confidence we're going to find a deal that's fair and works for both sides.
And yet, here we are, a month from training camp, and Johnny Gaudreau still hasn't signed. That's GM Brad Treliving Friday after the team signed Sean Monahan to his 7-year contract extension. And now that Monahan has signed and that's been put to bed, all the attention definitely has turned to Gaudreau and his extension. And it's turned into the biggest story of the summer. I don't think that's really exaggerating at all. I mean, these two guys, and specifically now Gaudreau, lasting into late August, the most exciting player, the best player on the team, embroiled in a long contract negotiation. Let's not forget, he's been eligible to sign a contract extension for about 13 and a half months now. Like, July 1st, 2015 is when he was eligible to sign a contract extension. It's August 23rd, 2016. So, you know, it's been quite a while since he's been eligible to sign.
I think a lot of people that followed this team in the 90s, such as myself, you can't help but start feeling neurotic about Calgary and an American wanting to be here. It just keeps coming back. And that's everybody
keeps coming up too.
Everybody I talk to, even though he has not said a word about that, he's not said, geez, I'd really like to be back home in the Eastern Seaboard. He said the exact opposite. He goes, no, when you play hockey, you got to leave away from home. And that's just the way it is. I have plenty of off season to do that. Like, he said all that kind of stuff, but people just, they worry about term, and they worry about, you know what? Don't really want to, you know, new coach, new this, new that. Like, it's nerve-wracking because, but, you know, we had Duha on today, and he's not worried about it. But, I mean, I am. I try not to be, but I just think like
the more and more it drags on, the more and more it's there.
What does it say about the city? What does it say, you know, about the team and going forward? If you can't get this guy signed, or if he only wants to be here for 3 years, or whatever it is, right? It's concerning for sure. And once it's done and it's all set in stone, then it'll be just fine. But until then, look out.
I thought the guys this morning had a really good chat with Eric DeHatchick of the Globe and Mail, one of our NHL insiders, and they kind of went right into it. Will Nault and Ryan Pinder this morning, Eric DeHatchick from the Globe and Mail, globesports.com, and started with the comparisons. Monahan's deal's done, Gaudreau's isn't, and DeHatchick kind of understands why.
Right from the start, I thought, okay, this is going to mirror the Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews situation in Chicago, because it's a very similar situation. I mean, obviously those guys have Stanley Cup rings, but when you think about where Chicago was, you know, when those guys first arrived on the scene, you know, they became part of the marketing, the face of the franchise. They were on all of the brochures, and they got it done on the ice. That was the thing. You know, they had lots of high draft choices before that, and it just didn't work. So suddenly, you know, they turned the corner. People were excited about hockey. And so there hasn't really been a situation like that since those two guys arrived, until Monahan and Gaudreau came into Calgary. Very similar type of players. You know, Gaudreau is the Kane, and Monahan has the leadership qualities and all the intangibles. So it just made sense that, you know, when they finally got this thing done, that's why I thought it was taking longer. Like, you know, Scheifele signed, and you know, MacKinnon signed, all these other contracts got done. I thought what they really want to do is roll both of these out at the same time, and it takes time to get two of them done, especially because each is represented by a different agent. I think that was part of the complication, because if you look at the one real significant difference is that Kane and Toews are both represented by the same agency, so they're negotiating on behalf of both, and it's, you know, and they essentially, they've signed identical contracts twice now, and so I think that was the wrinkle, and I think that, you know, there was probably a lot of back and forth between the two groups, Pat Morris's group and Lewis's Gross group, and finally they had to, you know, like get one done, because, you know, you don't want two guys unsigned. So why Monahan ahead of Gaudreau? Well, to me, there's one procedural reason. Monahan could have been offer sheeted and Gaudreau couldn't. So what if you get in a situation where you sign Gaudreau, it's going to cost a few more dollars, and, you know, it might be in the $7 million range. Does that make somebody think, you know, the Flames are, you know, now have got all this money committed to Gaudreau, could we possibly offer sheet Monahan? And so I just, you know, it's very logical the way this thing is unfolding. Monahan is done. I don't think the Gaudreau thing is going to get done before World Cup. I think it would be better if it did. But I take it on faith. You know, the press conference on Friday, I thought it was really telling. Someone asked Monahan, and then, you know, and Brad Tree Living, of course, afterwards about the negotiations, and both reference, well, we don't play until October the 2nd, 12th. So I think it's probably going to take some time, but I don't see this not getting done. I mean, he's got, you know, he's essentially got no leverage. There's nobody can offer sheet him, you know, and so, you know, the only thing he can do is not play. Now, I know the organization does not want to go to war with their best players. I mean, you know, this organization has really rebuilt its reputation around the National Hockey League. This is becoming a destination. You know, Troy Brouwer wants to come here. Michael Frolik wants to come here. 3 or 4 years ago, that was not the case. The organization didn't have a good reputation. The new regime has come in, and within the various precincts around the National Hockey League, you know, suddenly this is a place where people want to come. So that's good. And so I think it'll get done. I just don't know that, you know, and I'm sure that the Gaudreau camp is looking at what Ekblad got and looking at what Tarasenko got, and, you know, $7.5 million, and probably is aiming for that. I don't think they want to pay that here. So somewhere between 6.375 for Monahan and those two contracts, which, as I believe, you know, maybe you can correct me, but I think those are the two highest contracts ever that anybody got coming out of their entry-level contracts, right? Tarasenko and Ekblad. So somewhere, you know, that's the number. Somewhere between those, the 7.5 and the 6.375, that's what Gaudreau is going to get. I think he will get it. I think he'll be in the uniform for the start of the season, but I can't predict that it's going to be this week, next week, a month from now. But I would say, if I was a Calgary Flames fan, I wouldn't lose a lot of sleep over it.
Eric, did you read anything to Elliot Friedman's report last week that Gaudreau would not negotiate during the World Cup?
That would be okay. I mean, that means that they're closing the negotiating window from September 17th to October the 1st. So that means you try to get the thing done by September the 17th. Then if you do get it done by September 17th, then you don't have to worry about, you know, insuring, you know, your legs and your future earnings, which can be an expensive proposition. So that is the first deadline in this process. You know, like for all parties, if you can get it done by the time they drop the puck in the World Cup, you're in good shape. And if you can't get it done by then, and if you do have to go out and get insurance, then you know it creates a wrinkle in the negotiation. So that is my belief, that they want to get this thing done by then, just because it just makes it easier. And if they're just fighting over like comparative nickels and dimes, then it's ridiculous to drag it out. But the one thing that I've noticed this year in terms of negotiations is that, I'll use the Anze Kopitar negotiation as an example. I was actually in Los Angeles when Kopitar signed the contract, and I think the belief, because I was monitoring it pretty closely, and I think I had the numbers pretty accurately, but I was told right up until the end the number was going to be $9.5 million. And I think, there were other people that were reporting something similar, and we were all, we all had pretty good sources on it. And the number ended up being 10. And finally, it was like, okay, well, how did it get to be 10? Like, why 10 and 9? Well, what's the difference? Well, it looks good on the resumes of the agents, to get that number up. And, you look at Monahan's contract. Why 6.375? Oh, yeah, that's 75 more than McKinnon, and a couple of hundred thousand. It matters to the agent sometimes in terms of the way they are presenting themselves and their stable, that they can get a little bit more than the next guy. And so sometimes that enters into the negotiation. Nobody wants to talk about it. Certainly the GMs don't want to talk about that. The agents, will deny it. But it is a fact. These guys are businessmen in their own right, and they believe that, once they sign, the premier guys in their stable, then they have to turn around and start recruiting other players, and they can turn around and say, hey, my client, got X dollars more than a comparable guy because of my extremely good negotiating skills. So sometimes things get bogged down in I can't say that word on the air. the word I'm talking about. It stuff that shouldn't matter. Like nitpicky, stupid stuff. The good news, I think, is that what we've seen since the current regime has come into Calgary is that these are level-headed, smart people, and I think that most of these negotiations have gone fairly smoothly. I mean, they're not going to overpay, but they are aware of what the market is, and so somewhere down, somewhere they were going to saw off in the middle, and it will get done. And then all you have to worry about is the question that you posed right at the start of the segment, which is who plays on that line now that Hudler's gone.
So here's, I agree with everything you said, Eric. I think the added framework of why Monahan got done first, I just think there was a really tight window that he had to fit into with the signings of Barkov, of Forsberg, of Scheifele, of McKinnon. The market was so clear on exactly what he was worth. Guys of the same age, guys of the same service time, guys of similar point totals. I mean, you knew the range. I imagine we could have guessed the number and been within $200,000 or $300,000 months ago. With Gaudreau, I'm not so sure. Now, you mentioned Ekblad, which is an interesting comparable because I hadn't thought about it. Not obviously the same position, but a franchise-type player coming out of entry level. Tarasenko, that's the deal I'd been using as a comparable. 8 years times 7.5. Both guys get $60 million. If you were to offer max term and 7.5 a year, is it a slam dunk that Gaudreau's camp accepts that?
I would say so, yeah. I mean, or unless they want to go to 7.75 for the reasons that I cited earlier, to prove that they can actually get more than those other two guys. In each one of these situations, there is something unique about the athlete, right? So in Tarasenko, St. Louis pays a premium because he has the Russian option. Now, and I know that Tarasenko is not going to go back and play in the KHL because, the money isn't that, good anymore. And the league, the stability of the league has been, hasn't been great. And he just wants to be in North America. I mean, I've talked to him enough to know that this is where he wants to be. But he has that option that no one else does. And so I think you pay the Russian premium there. In the case of Ekblad, I mean, Florida has been doing some, off the Charts kind of negotiation, but I think they understood that this guy is going to be, they believe is going to be dynamite, and so they just felt that whatever it took to sign him was what they were going to pay. So Gaudreau, you know, where do you slot him in? You know, he doesn't play like a big physical game, but he is a guy that brings people into the stands, and I think that you do pay a premium for that. You know, I liken him to Theo Fleury a little bit. You know, when the team isn't good, why do people go to the games? Well, you go to the games if there's an electric player in your lineup that lifts you out of your seat. Like, even if the team isn't winning, you know, Johnny Gaudreau often is worth the price of admission. When you think about, you look at those 16,000 people wearing sweaters, I mean, it's Giordano and Gaudreau's sweater that they're wearing, right? So there's a dollar value to that the agent, I think, is going to try to negotiate. And I think that's fair. You know, I mean, you know, to me, Monahan is sort of that Joe Nieuwendyk type. You know, you want a guy like that. You win with a guy like that. You know, he's starting to come out of his shell a little bit. But in terms of, you know, people who walk into the door, you know, two people talking to each other going in through the turnstiles, they don't say, you know, wow, what's Sean Monahan going to do tonight? Is he going to tip another one in? Is he going to get a great rebound goal? No, they're talking about, you know, the move that, you know, that Gaudreau might make on a defenseman to undress him and get in. And that, so you're right, that it is hard to quantify what that is worth. And I think that's, you know, probably the biggest thing that where it's hung up. You know, like, you can assess what his value is on the ice, and you can use, you know, rough comparables, but I think that there's a premium that you sometimes attach to a player like that, that has that star power, that is that face of the franchise, you know, that generates income for you as a business. And I think that, you know, that camp is probably saying, you know, we want to attach a dollar value to it, and this is what it is, and they're saying, we agree that there is a dollar value to that, but we think it's lower than that.
Gaudreau can't feel the market at all. He can't be offer sheeted, not enough service time. He's not a free agent until he's 27. That gives you 4 years of essentially team control, is what they refer to it often in baseball as. What would you suggest the appetite for a long-term versus short-term deal is from Gaudreau's camp? Could it be possible that they'd rather have a 4 or 5 year deal and be closer to free agency rather than this max term that we've seen with all the comparables, with Tarasenko, with Ekblad, with all the guys we compared Monahan to?
That's a great question, and I don't know the answer to that definitively. I have not been able to get a definitive answer on that from a source that I trust. So what I will say is that, you know, here's what I think. I do think that if they saw off at 5 years, that's probably, you know, that would probably be acceptable to that camp. You know, I think if you're Calgary, obviously you're trying to buy out years of free agency, because then you have the commitment from the player for, you know, for the prime of his career. I don't know, I heard all the guys talking about it on Friday, and I agree. I think Johnny Gaudreau is happy playing here. I think that he understands that this is a hockey market. I think this is a place where they have a chance to win. I like the future of Calgary. I like the future of Edmonton. I like the future of Winnipeg. I think all these teams are going to be, in the next 2 years, very good. And all that Woe Canada stuff that we had to deal with in the spring, the narrative is going to be different within 24 months out here in the West. So I think that there's a lot of reasons to be here. And frankly, you know, I mean, it might be good for him to be away from, you know, family, friends, and just, you know, drop in occasionally and visit. You know, sometimes if you're committed to being a hockey player, you know, the distraction of having that allows you to, you know, to just be a hockey player here and then be Johnny Gaudreau when you go home for the summer. So, you know, but I don't know him well enough to know, like, is there a lure of playing in Philadelphia or New Jersey or any of those, you know, Boston, where he went to school, any of those places where he was a phenom before he arrived in the National Hockey League. And that there may be something like that at work there, that he might want to, you know, 5 years down the road, you know, go and play at home. I mean, there's lots of talk sort of under the surface. You know, remember all of the talk about Stamkos going to Toronto? So, you know, when I was sort of exploring that story, several people that I trust told me, Stamkos isn't going to go to Toronto, but watch for Tavares. And I thought, oh, interesting, because they're feeling, and I don't know John Tavares very well at all, but they felt that he was more of a homebody than Steven Stamkos, that Steven Stamkos would be happy enough to play it out in Tampa. And in fact, that's what did happen. He ended up re-signing there. But John Tavares is approaching that point where he is going to soon be an unrestricted free agent. And if Toronto has money to spend, you know, it may well be that the Tavares camp is more, in, you know, would be amenable to listen. something. And so, again, I don't know how Gaudreau feels about that. And I'm not sure that you could even get an honest answer, because, you know, it would not be in his best interest to say what he really believes. He will have to say, no, I want to be in Calgary. I'm happy here. That's where I want to play the rest of my life. But it'll be interesting when they finally settle on the term, because if it is like a 5-year contract, I think that would then be a signal that, yeah, maybe, you know, in 5 years time, you want to reassess. And you don't know. I mean, so much changes in a person's life at that young age over 5 years, you know, could be married, could have a family, could have roots in this community that doesn't have right now. You don't know. So I wouldn't be overly worried about term again, if I was a Flames fan. You know, to me, it's, you know, get him signed and see where this team is going. Because if all the pieces fall into place, the one thing that never changes is that good players like to play with other good players, and they like to play in winning environments. And if you can create that here, then everything else falls into place.
Good stuff with Eric Dehatchik of the Globe and Mail and Globesports.com on with Pinder and Will Nault this morning. Really some good insight on Johnny Gaudreau and fact he hasn't signed and what this deal might end up looking like. He joined the guys down the South Street Burger guest hotline. Savor a juicy burger with 100% Angus beef and a hand scoop milkshake. Visit their new location, now open in East Hill, 17th Avenue Southeast and Stoney. He's not signed yet. We don't know when he's going to sign. You just ran a bit of a poll on the old website.
Yeah, we had this up this morning up on our web page there, our main page. And the question is, when does Johnny Gaudreau sign with the Flames? And so far, leading the pack, the answer, before the World Cup at 42.2%. Number two, I'm worried about a holdout, 35.5%. After the World Cup comes in at 17.7%. The night before the season opener in Edmonton, 4.4%. So a little more split than we thought. I think there's some people who are kind of worrying like we are a little bit, you know, going, But, you know, if you go just by 42% think that he's going to get signed before the World Cup.
But that would mean that 58% think he's going to get signed after the World Cup, right?
Yes.
Even though there's three different options after the World Cup, 58% still believe.
I imagine the stats people will be all over me for well, it's actually Will who put this one up. So the way he did it, you never know. Should we have another answer in there? I don't know.
It's a poll.
Vote if you wish.
It's not really exact.
It's not
science.
Super scientific.
It's the topic that won't go away when it comes to the Toronto Blue Jays. So Johnny Gaudreau and his contract extension, the topic that won't go away with the Calgary Flames. What's that same topic for the Blue Jays? Because making news once again, that's next on The Big Show, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
You have the scores on your phone. This is where you get in-depth analysis and opinion on the sports that matter to you. Sportsnet 960, Calgary. Steinberg, Kerr, The Big Show on Sportsnet 960. Brought to you by The Comedy Cave. Tickets always $10. If it's comedy you crave, come to The Cave.
As the Blue Jays get set for a huge week, everyone is talking about the six-man rotation. Aaron Sanchez has been optioned to single-A Dunedin as a result, and the rest of the rotation is getting more rest between their starts, and GM Ross Atkins thinks that all of this, whether it's Sanchez or the rest of his rotation, it's a good thing for everyone.
Jay Happ, Marco Estrada, Marcus Stroman have not been guys that year in and year out are well into the 200 inning mark. So, you know, R.A. Dick's been there, Liriano's been there, but all of these guys getting some rest before we have hopefully the best push of their lives, we see as beneficial. We'll have to adjust if the six-man rotation isn't working and all of a sudden effectiveness isn't the same of guys, but man, the guys have really stepped up to the plate. They've made small adjustments, and I think they're all benefiting from a little bit of added rest.
It truly is the topic du jour for the Blue Jays right now. In about an hour's time, Shai Davidi will join us from Sportsnet.ca. But until we determine whether this is a success or not, I think it's going to continue to be a hot discussion topic because there are some who think that it is hurting this Jays pitching staff. There are some, like me, who believe that this is the right thing to be doing. Because for me, the most important thing between now and the end of the regular season is giving yourself the best chance of being able to field the best possible roster come the postseason. And for me, the best possible roster come the postseason has Aaron Sanchez in your rotation. So I continue to be all for it. And as you just heard from GM Ross Atkins there, if it turns out that it doesn't work, and all of a sudden Hap starts getting lit up because he's not getting into anywhere near good of a routine, or you know, then Estrada starts getting lit up regularly, and Sanchez is struggling. Okay, well then you revisit it and then you make a change. But as of right now, this is I think the best thing for the Blue Jays to try and make sure you can have Sanchez in your rotation come late September, come October, and as such, have the best possible rotation for the postseason.
I think so, too. The thing is, it's a nice problem to have. They were talking on the radio broadcast on the weekend. They were saying a lot of teams have trouble getting four guys on a rotation. So at least you have the problem to kind of worry about.
Yeah.
At least, you know, if you're worried about, you know, something that hasn't happened yet, or you're worried about if they're going to get strained or they're going to get burnt out or tired or fatigued, whatever word you use in baseball, that's okay. But if you keep winning and keep doing this, and I know they're tight with Boston right now, but if they can get some separation here by the end of the month, then that kind of makes things a little different for you too. You can kind of rest some more guys, mm-hmm. or maybe bring somebody up from Buffalo that maybe you wouldn't, and do that kind of thing. So yeah, I think it's a good problem to have, and you're lucky to have it. I think fans are fans, right? They want to see the guys get out there and pitch and keep going. And they're not in the trainer's room. They don't see the reports about players getting worn out and stuff. And nothing would be worse than if the team just totally tanks and loses all their arms by mid-September. Nothing could be worse.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're doing a really neat job and really thinking outside the box to manage the situation.
One, and if it turns out that you do need to revisit it and you do need to make a change, they've got options, right? I mean, okay, so maybe it's determined that, you know what, we're just going to let Sanchez remain in the rotation. We tried it, but you know what, he's too good. Let's just pitch him like a regular pitcher and don't worry about giving him rest. Well, then you can take Dickey out, or you can take Liriano out, and then all of a sudden, or if you're like, you know what, Sanchez needs to go to the bullpen, you can do that, and we just, as much as we tried the six-man rotation and stretching out his starts and all that type of stuff, we still think what's best for his long-term health is being placed in the bullpen. There's an option there. They've got options. It's not like they need to be totally rigid either.
And what's the one thing that everyone freaks out about? It's the middle relief. People just, if you're unsure of anything in the Toronto Blue Jays, it's that. That's the thing that you go, oh my God, not Brett Cecil. Please don't put him out. You know, when they had Storen in there, oh my God, don't put it. Like, that's what people did. And they were usually right, because things would go really weird more often than not. So if you have, you know, maybe Sanchez is in there and he helps you out for a few games, is that such a bad thing?
I'd still like, the best case scenario is you've got Sanchez in your rotation, because he's one of the three best pitchers in the rotation this season. So yeah, I mean, he's in Cy Young contention, and you want him in your rotation. If it doesn't work out that way, okay, well, then you maybe have to go a different direction. And I think, as disappointing as it would be for some time, I think everybody would understand. But if all of a sudden you had Liriano in there as a potential long reliever, because you went, that's not the most horrible thing in the world. In fact, if things go to plan, you're probably going to be using Liriano as an option out of the bullpen come the postseason. Like, if everything goes to plan and this six-man rotation works, then your playoff rotation is not going to have Liriano or Dickey in it. It's going to be Sanchez, Stroman, Estrada, and Hap. So you're going to be pitching Liriano out of the bullpen anyways. So that's your best-case scenario right now. So if it happens a little bit quicker because you don't like the way that the six-man thing's working, you can go in that direction. So it is very much the hot topic right now. I don't think it's going to stop being the hot topic until we determine, A, if they're going to be in the playoffs, and B, what the playoff rotation looks like. You made the point yesterday about, you know, just how big this week could be for the Blue Jays, and I'm kind of right with you. And I know that whenever I float something like this out there, there are some who disagree, but you know, you've got a pretty bad Angels team.
They're terrible on the road too, right? They're like 1-9, like nothing. Like, they're just awful on the road.
And then an even worse team this weekend in Minnesota. So the next six games you've got here, you've got these real winnable opponents or beatable opponents. And yeah, games against Cleveland and series against Baltimore and Boston, they're huge. But it's the series against the Twins and the Angels of the world that you can really make your ground up, because there's so little separating Boston and Baltimore and Toronto and Cleveland and Texas right now that you're going to lose a series against, but there's no guarantee that you're winning every series against these teams because they're as good as you are or pretty close to as good as you are, and stuff happens. Look what happened against Cleveland, right? I mean, that stuff can happen. I bet the Jays play the way they played against Cleveland against the Angels. They're probably winning two of three or three of three, but the Indians are a bit of a better team. There's just that much more depth there. They can cash in on some of these opportunities they were given, and they did. So I guess the way I look at it, the next two series you play against the Angels and the Twins, these are the games and the series you need to win. Whereas the series against Baltimore that follows and the series later on this year, those are the series that you really want to win. I think that these next six, these are the ones you need to take two of three from.
Yeah, you got to get, and you also have to really establish the Rogers Center as that place that, yeah, you come in here, it's going to be a rough series for you. You're not going to come in here with it. The crowds are huge. They're on top of you. They're knowledgeable. You got to get after it. And when you look at that schedule and you go, oh my God, they got Baltimore a few more times. Yep. And that last week of the schedule in September, very interesting. Back to back, it's Baltimore first, then Boston.
Yep.
That could be, I think Baltimore is going to fall off. I really do. I don't know if they're even a wild card team. I just think their pitching is going to let them down. And I think Boston's going to find a way, and it's going to be right at each other the whole time. And it's going to come down to that series.
There's two games right now in terms of what we're looking at. Orioles, not this week, but next week. They've got a set still to go. They've got seven still to go with the Yankees. They've got six games still to go with the Orioles. And the Red Sox wrap up the year with three on the road at Fenway. They've got six more to go this year against the Red Sox, and one then, at the Rogers Center.
And then they go to Tampa, too, which is a place that they... You know,
in Tampa to start off September.
And over the years, they haven't been great there for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Maybe the sparse crowds.
And it's a lot, I mean, as you'd expect, after this series against the Twins over the weekend, it's a lot of American League East play.
Yep.
So you've got two series after this series against the Twins, you got two series against the Orioles, two series against the Rays, two series against the Yankees, and two series against the Red Sox still to go this season.
And a Western California, Washington State trip in there, too.
Yeah. So,
which will be like a home series in Seattle for them.
Still one of those things. Pinder raves about it. Still one of those things I got to do. Is
go see the Jays in Seattle?
Yeah. I've been to numerous Mariners games, but I've never seen the Jays play there. Pinder's told me, like, you know, regaled me about four or five times about his experience there. It sounds like it would be an absolute party.
Yeah, it's on my list.
It is definitely on my bucket list. I love the city, and even more to see, you know, 25,000 Blue Jays fans.
Just take over.
Exactly. It'd be pretty cool. Now, just as cool would be winning a trip to Las Vegas, which we have got the opportunity for you to do as a fan club member right now. As Mr. Kirsch said, it's been a bit of a wonky summer. Hasn't been a lot of sun. We've been rained on and blown over by the wind. Well, why not get to Vegas in September and kind of let loose before the fall kicks off? Fan club members, we are sending you to Las Vegas. You're leaving on September 19th. You're coming back on September 22nd. And included in this package, return airfare for two. You get three nights at the Cosmopolitan Hotel. There's very few hotels in Vegas that you'd want to stay in more than that. I don't think there are any. It's right at the top of the list.
Good spot.
The location is perfect. It's brand new. $600 in spending money. Everything is set up for you. So it's for fan club members only. Sportsnet.ca/960. You're going September 19th to September 22nd. We are choosing our winner on September 12th. So you got a few weeks if you want to enter for this prize. It's a free trip to Las Vegas. Why wouldn't you use your fan club?
Free is good.
Exactly. Do the Edmonton Oilers have their next captain? And is it as easy a choice as some would like to think it is? Just the Big Show continues next on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.